This is an ABC podcast.
Climate change is the Pacific's biggest security threat.
We lead this special broadcast with coverage of Cyclone Pam, one of the biggest storms ever to hit the Pacific.
On Monday night, there was a lot of raining in Honiara, so that was the thing that causes a lot of floods in our communities.
Rising seas are swallowing homes, cyclones are growing stronger, and lives are being threatened. For Pacific Islanders, the climate crisis isn't just a distant threat. It's an everyday reality. But bigger polluting countries have been slow to act.
We're left with no choice but to contend with this reality that if we don't act, it's literally existential. It completely pushes us to kind of do everything we can and think of creative, innovative ways of trying to address the problem of climate change.
In 2019, a group of university students decided this wasn't good enough. In a classroom at the University of the South Pacific, they devised a plan to challenge the world's most powerful nations, bringing the fight to the highest court on earth, the International Court of Justice. Their mission? To make climate inaction a crime under international law.
We've just been living this campaign. This has been our lives for the last 5 years, and taking it forward has been the one singular goal of our lives.
Hi, I'm Scott Wyde, and this is Polytalk, where I'll take you behind the scenes of Pacific politics and how it affects us. I'll speak with politicians from across the Pacific region and with everyday people about the political experiences that shape us. Today on Polytalk, how did a handful of students turn an idea into a global legal movement? And what does this mean for those on the front lines of climate change? You'll hear from Vishal Prasad, who in 2019 as a university student decided to take on the highest court in the world.
And there was this worry that the wording of the resolution, the framing and drafting of the resolution would get watered down as more and more states become involved. The nature of international politics is such that can often be a game of compromise.
And you'll hear from Vanuatu's Attorney General, Arnold Luffman, who led the campaign at the top political levels from the United Nations all the way to the Peace Palace.
When you have a case where you have a diverse countries coming from all different parts of the world, each country having their own climate-related challenge, how do you get the legal arguments? How do you align them?
In March 2019, Vishal Prasad was a 24-year-old student at the University of the South Pacific in Fiji.
So my undergrad was in a majors in politics and law, and then my postgrad studies were in international politics.
He'd heard about a group of students at the USP campus in Vanuatu who were pulling together a plan to challenge the world on climate change.
I was interested in climate change. I was always interested in trying to push this idea of climate justice. And when I found out about this campaign, I think immediately something that struck me was how precise, tangible, and specific this campaign was and the potential that it had.
27 law students from the University of the South Pacific had decided that enough was enough. Climate change was wreaking havoc to their homes, and international conferences like COP were slow to get global climate policies moving. So they decided a different approach was needed, a legal approach. Could Pacific countries get the International Court of Justice, the highest court in the world, to make climate inaction a crime? Vishal, you joined the campaign at university. What was the first goal you and other students had when it came to getting this legal question to the ICJ?
By the time when I joined, there was already an indication by the Vanuatu government that they would be interested in this campaign. And so the plan then on became that we needed the Pacific Islands Forum to be on board as well. And so when I joined, our interactions with Fiji and other Pacific Island governments was centered around this, that if this was to be brought up at the Pacific Islands Forum for Fiji and other countries to support. Much of our work at that point had become trying to galvanize regional support for this.
Campaigning to get Pacific countries to endorse this at the Pacific Islands Forum became your full-time job. What did your day-to-day look like?
It's a very difficult question to answer. Some days you'd have an immense amount of work pouring through your emails, responding to, trying to strategize and think about how, what's this project going to look like and how do you get these people to understand. We had interviews as well, media interviews, trying to speak to journalists, partners, universities, etc., trying to get support. So it was a lot of desk work, I would say. Hours of just being glued to documents, concept notes, emails, correspondence, etc., trying to just move the discussion forward.
You worked for 3 years during the COVID pandemic as well in anticipation for the 2022 Pacific Islands Forum. And that year, Pacific leaders met for a week in Suva, Fiji to discuss a wide range of issues affecting the region. And there was a lot of anticipation around whether the leaders would endorse the idea of taking a legal question to the International Court of Justice. What were you doing during this week in the lead up?
We hosted the Pacific Solidarity Festival, and it was this gathering near the shores in Suva, near the foreshore in Suva. We had this vaka, this canoe, and this was very symbolic to the messaging of the ICJ campaign, that this was about a journey that the Pacific is taking to the world's highest court to seek greater climate justice. And this was building upon the voyaging history of the Pacific, that Pacific Islanders have been great voyagers in the past, and this is another great voyage it's taking to the ICJ. There was a moment in that time when everyone and at the foreshore was getting on their small canoes, etc., and getting ready to set sail. And it was something about that moment that really hit me hard, because this was people who were not within the ICJ bubble, and there were people from all over the city and from civil society organizations, partners, friends, allies, etc., had come together to support this. As we were just standing on the shores, there was this chant that we were singing about the people gonna rise like the water. And as the tides were rising, the people were going to rise higher. I think that was one moment in the midst of all of the chaos of the Pacific Islands Forum that really stuck to me as a symbol, I think, of all the things this campaign has been about until now. And it's about the coming together of people. And that was, after COVID, the first time we were able to do that.
One family, but not always in harmony. Pacific leaders have held their first face-to-face meeting in years, their minds set on the existential challenge of climate change.
We are in unprecedented times, and this collective is at a critical juncture in its history.
At the end of each Pacific Islands Forum, Pacific leaders release a communique, a document detailing what they've agreed on during discussions. Were you there when the communique became available?
We were with a group of partners from civil society, friends and colleagues. I think it was a late night. We were just beside in the city, just beside the venue where the gathering and the forum was being held, and we were all waiting for the resolution, the communique to drop. And when it did drop, we found the document, and everyone just started looking for any mention of ICJ in the document, because it was a long document and they had other themes and issues discussed as well. And we found it, and then everyone started pouring into seeing what that meant, the language, etc. And then we were so pleased to see, it was a moment of celebration actually, when we just saw the language that was adopted and was said, which was a huge achievement. It's just two words or three words that supported, noted, endorsed kind of this kind of language was all the past 3 years of hard work had been about.
And what did that moment mean to you?
I think that was the moment it just turned to become this international campaign, because after we got the Pacific Island Forum's endorsement and support, everything turned global then, because we knew that the next target was to get the UN General Assembly resolution. And so immediately everything pivoted around trying to get this campaign into other regions, popularized into other regions, other spaces that we traditionally have not been operating in. And so how do we journey into that? How do we pivot and transition into that? So I think after the forum was the starting point of this turn towards the more international.
You've been working nonstop for 3 years on this. Were you able to take a break and rest, or did you just have to capitalize on the momentum?
No, we had to move very quickly. So there was no time for rest, relaxation, or kind of re-strategizing. We knew the path ahead very clearly. So the forum was in, I think, June of that year, 2022. Straight after that, we moved for a brief campaign stint in New York. So for the remainder of the year, my colleague Solomon and I, we moved to New York. And we were based out of New York to support the international stage of the campaign. I was trying to get it to the UNGA, because that September, when the UN General Assembly session opened for the year, this item had to be put on the agenda, and Vanuatu and its legal team, its diplomats were working hard to do that.
From the beginning of the campaign in 2019, one Pacific country gave its support immediately, Vanuatu. The country's politicians worked alongside the students as they petitioned for the campaign to be endorsed at the Pacific Islands Forum. And with that hurdle cleared, Vanuatu led the charge to gather support from around the world for the United Nations General Assembly to move a resolution to seek an opinion from the International Court of Justice on countries' obligations to address climate change. In order for that to happen, the campaign had to move to New York, where the UN's headquarters are. There, Vishal Prasad worked non-stop campaigning alongside one of Vanuatu's top leaders.
My name is Arnold Ear Laufman. I'm the Attorney General of Vanuatu. The role of the Attorney General's office is to, amongst other things, to represent government on all legal matters. And so all legal matters includes both domestic and international legal matters.
From your experiences, what does the threat of climate change in Vanuatu mean for you in real terms, and how has it shaped the work that you do?
Climate change in a small island country like Vanuatu is very real. It affects everybody's lives. Food production, sea level rise, fisheries, resources, everything. And this is something that is here to stay. Because it's here to stay, our legislations going forward must reflect, must show how we respond to that. We have to be resilient. We can't do it on our own. We need the national collaboration, a collective effort in order to respond and address impacts of climate change.
Mr. Laufman, when you first heard about these students and their campaign, what did you think?
My initial thought of it was, you know, I didn't think much of it, to be frank. I didn't think much of it. Initially, I thought, well, because in my work as a lawyer, I do a lot of advocacy litigation. I appear in court. And so my initial thought was, oh, well, are we suing some country? Are we suing some big companies? If we are, then we better, you know, prepare ourselves.
The students worked for years to get an endorsement from the Pacific Islands Forum. And once it was time to go international, that's where you stepped in to help. Why was it important to be based and working in New York?
Having a core crew in New York made up of, global North countries, global South countries, literally, we had a really diverse group which had members from, you know, various regions from around the world.
What strategies did you and your team use in New York to gather momentum around this resolution?
Well, there was no secret strategy that we employ in order to get all these people, you know, all these countries, all these international organizations in to support the case. When everybody says, oh, this is something, you know, that will affect us, this is our future, especially for small island developing countries, we bear the brunt of climate change. This is a case that is everybody's case. everybody's case. And so the alliances like PIF, OASIS, Small Island Developing States, CITS, OACPS, we spoke, we connected, we liaised with regional organizations. Basically, we reached out to as many regional organizations as we can and as many countries as we can.
And what did that look like for you behind the scenes?
All right, behind the scenes, let me give you from my end, behind the scenes, sometimes, because you're working with people, countries, organizations from all over the world. Sometimes I sit up at 12 o'clock, midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., having meetings, having bilaterals with people all over the world. That's how it has been like for the past 3 years, pretty much. Behind the scenes, that's how it is.
All those late nights paid off after months of intense campaigning. The United Nations General Assembly unanimously voted to request an advisory opinion from the International Court of Justice.
After more than 4 years of campaigning by Vanuatu, the UN has passed a landmark resolution to get the world's top court to consider whether countries have an obligation to fight climate change.
May I take it up? The Assembly decides to adopt draft resolution A/77/M58. It is so decided.
How did you feel when the UN General Assembly made that decision to request the ICJ's advisory opinion?
It was a great feeling, to put it, to say very frankly. It was really great. It was a great success story. For me, it was when the resolution went before the UNGA and got unanimously accepted. For me, that was a success story for diplomacy.
The United Nations requested an advisory opinion from 15 judges at the International Court of Justice on two questions. What are the obligations of states under international law to protect the climate and environment from greenhouse gas emissions? And what are the legal consequences for states that have caused significant harm to the climate and the environment? The judges' opinions are not binding, but it would let small island nations pursue legal action against polluters with more certainty. The court required countries and organizations to send in written submissions to make their case before an oral hearing could start. So over the next year and a half, Vishal and Attorney General Luffman worked non-stop at community and political levels to get as many submissions from as many countries as possible. And then finally, in December 2024, they were set to appear before the judges in person. Vishal and Attorney General Luffman traveled with thousands of people across the world to the headquarters of the International Court of Justice at the Peace Palace in The Hague.
The highest world court is about to hear a landmark case that could dictate the course of future climate change talks. Over the next fortnight, the International Court of Justice will hear testimony from nearly 100 countries, and 12 international organisations will present their case over the obligations of states and organisations to protect the climate and the environment from greenhouse gas emissions.
Vishal, how did you feel walking into the Peace Palace?
I had never been inside the Peace Palace, so I'd seen it from outside. So on the first day of the hearings was also my first time walking into the Peace Palace. It was this moment of, oh my God, we're literally in and we're starting in like an hour now. And yeah, it was an extremely emotional day.
The hearings lasted 2 weeks and hundreds of people stood up to make their cases both for and against the questions the judges would give their opinions on. What were some of the key moments that stuck out for you?
First and foremost, the whole presentation by Vanuatu and the Melanesian Spearhead Group was amazing.
I now give the floor to the representatives of Vanuatu and the Melanesian Spearhead Group, and I invite Mr. Ralph Eggenvanu to the podium. You have the floor, sir.
Mr. President, Madam Vice President, members of the court, good morning. It is with a profound sense of urgency and responsibility that I stand before you today representing the Republic of Vanuatu and the Melanesian Spearhead Group in these historic proceedings. The outcome of these proceedings will reverberate across generations, determining the fate of nations like mine and the future of our planet.
It was just this delivery, this presentation of the Pacific that I had, that was very new to the ICJ, because for so long this court was this very closed off space that Pacific countries had never come up or presented, or the ICJ had never heard of the realities and the stories of people. But it was this very real sense that the Vanuatu and the MSG presentation, like many other Pacific country presentations, brought to the table. It was this beautiful, magnificent demonstration of color, bringing this in our attires, in the traditional wear and jewelry that people brought inside. So it was just all of this. And on the other side, there were arguments that countries stood up to make that stood out for the wrong reasons, like Germany on the first day, and they stood out to say that the whole idea of future generations is an abstract concept, because future generations are abstract, they're not legal people right now, and they're abstract concepts. And that was a completely extreme, to me, an extreme construction or assessment of or argument that they brought to the ICJ. And straight after this very passionate speech there on why future generations matter and why the court needs to protect them.
Now, you spoke on the very last day of the hearing. How were you feeling in that moment?
There was a lot of ease within me, a lot of peace and calm within me. I had the opportunity to bring to a close the whole proceedings with this message that the Pacific has been championing. Or we have come from a background of navigation, that we have been wayfinders. And today the world needs wayfinders, and the judges have that opportunity to provide the world with that necessary guidance that it so desperately needs. So I was sitting there getting ready to present, and it was just truly a lot of expectation, but I knew we had to do this. I needed to say this, and I was ready to say it.
Honorable members of the court, today the world needs wayfinders, those who can guide us towards a path that protects our homes, upholds our rights, and preserves our dignity.
Can you describe what it was like to be standing at the podium in front of the 15 judges?
They all were like up in their seats. They had heard like 2 weeks of arguments at the last day. We knew we had to bring our A game, because we knew everyone was just exhausted after 2 weeks of all just listening to arguments, and we knew the judges would be too. So we had to bring the best. And so when I started speaking, I saw the judges kind of just look up. Everyone was interested. Everyone was listening. Yes, there were moments where we would linger with a few judges and look to them. Of course, spanning the whole desk of all of the 15 judges, etc., and ensuring they were listening, paying attention, etc., and that they got something from this.
What was going through your head when you finished your presentation?
I think when we finished, there was this huge sense of relief. I think a sigh of relief and just a sense of accomplishment. And again, the initial sense was just this gratitude, which I'll tell you why there's this there. But when I looked up at finished the statement, looked to the judges, I could see a few of them had taken what we were trying to say, and we were grateful. Some were not so sure if the others, some took the message across, but we were happy that we had done everything we literally could to bring this campaign justice. And someone on the first day of the hearings told me this, that we have done absolutely everything that in our power, and there was nothing else that we could have done to kind of change the outlook, change the decision that would come out. And so saying the last thank yous from that podium and looking up, it was that sense that it was, that's why that was in my mind, that now we've actually done everything that we possibly could, and now it's all in the hands of the judges.
You've been able to see up close how activism and politics has worked to bring this climate campaign to where it is now. What has surprised you about this process?
I think something that surprised me of how activism and politics works in addressing some of the biggest global challenges or regional challenges we have is often how separate the two are and how often people are surprised that this campaign was able to achieve what it was able to achieve because of this collaborative spirit and this collaborative nature of how governments and civil society can work together. I think that is not a model that's often seen, and a number of reasons why, but I think that is something that has surprised me, because this was something natural and normal for us in this campaign. It made sense for us to collaborate with governments because our campaign needed the support of governments. And I think that was something that surprised me when speaking with partners and other folk around this, is how often the two fields are separate. And it seems like they are conflicting at times, at odds or at tensions with each other, when I think there can be quite a lot of benefit in moments where the two come together.
In just 5 years, Pacific law students, with support from Pacific leaders, took the idea of a legal question on climate change action all the way from a classroom in Vanuatu to the International Court of Justice. And along the way, made sure the eyes of the world watched the journey. After their non-stop campaign of late-night Zoom calls, meetings in New York, and discussions at the Pacific Islands Forum, Vishal Prasad and Arnold Luffman will wait to see what the world's highest court decides. For Vanuatu's Attorney General, seeing people from every walk of life join the campaign, and especially the Pacific's youth, has given him hope.
It's, for me personally, it has been a very rewarding experience. Very rewarding experience in the sense that I was able to meet, you know, this amazing group of people, amazing individuals from all walks of life, to see that among the civil society organizations that helped to support this campaign were the youth. The youth have been very, very focal in this. And Pacific Islands youth fighting climate change, they were amazing.
Vishal holds the same hope that through community, resilience and solidarity, the Pacific will forge on.
Coming back from the oral hearings and reflecting on everything that happened in December and everything that has happened in the last 5 years, I think I'm filled with just a sense of gratefulness and appreciation of how far we have come and how far this campaign has come, because it could not have been possible without so many people, so many young people, without our governments, without our regional partners, regional organizations, and just this coming together of the Pacific. I think something that this campaign has shown is the strength of the strength in solidarity, the strength in community, and how the Pacific can come together to address a problem as dire as climate change.
PolyTalk is hosted by me, Scott Wyde. Our producer is Kunta Murray Crofts. Our supervising producer is Jordan Fennell. And our executive producer is Faleanga Fulu, Inga Stunzna.